to another episode of the Innovation Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Gagan, and this week we're going to be talking about how AI might actually be inhibiting accessibility right now. I'm sure that you are constantly hearing about how accessibility is improving things. And this is especially true if you work or are involved in the area of accessibility. We're forever hearing that AI is going to revolutionize this space, and it might. But what people aren't considering right now is that actually for a lot of people, it's actually creating new barriers. It's often actually anti-accessibility. So, okay, this is not a super common thing that you'll hear online right now, but as far as I'm concerned, AI tools in their current state often lack built-in accessibility, and when used to generate content, they frequently fail to produce accessible outputs, despite the long-term promise by the companies who make these different AI products. Now, don't get me wrong. I do think that long-term AI will be very beneficial for accessibility. I'm very excited for the future to see how AI can actually do things that I probably haven't even considered. But the reality is that right now, I'm not convinced that AI is actually helpful in terms of accessibility in the way that everybody thinks it is. Now, let's start off with the most kind of basic form here. So the first thing is the actual anti-accessibility of AI tools themselves. It's not just the content that AI creates, but the tools and interfaces themselves that you use to interact with AI are often inaccessible. For example, the user interfaces, or the UI, is often inaccessible. Many AI interfaces rely heavily on mouse, which means that it's difficult for users who navigate via keyboard. For example, motor impairments or screen reader users. Are the controls focusable? Is the tab order logical? And that's the thing. Right here, a lot of tools already fall down because they're not actually built with keyboard navigation in mind. And I can tell you this from experience, because even navigating in something like ChatGPT, it's very cumbersome, and you actually have to navigate by graphics, because otherwise there's no way to get to the start of a message. So what you actually do is you press the G key or Shift and G to go to the previous graphic, and it will bring you to the little ChatGPT icon or logo that they have on every message that ChatGPT generates. And yes, that is a workaround right there, and it does relatively consistently work, but it's definitely not foolproof, and that's not a real solution. Same thing with Google Gemini, actually. When you're using Gemini, you can actually navigate to the previous heading, and it will actually bring you to your previous message, which is not, number one, how that should work. Your whole message should not be marked as a heading. And also, that is not how you should have to go to Gemini's message, because what you actually have to do is you have to go back to the previous heading, and then you have to scroll all the way down past your message, which sometimes are super long, and then actually get to Gemini's response. Now, the next thing here is screen reader compatibility. So as I kind of mentioned, text is often not structured properly. Dynamic content updates might not be announced. Buttons and links can often also lack proper area labels. So this is very true. ChatGPT especially has a lot of unlabeled buttons. Gemini, to be fair, is better about this. It still does have one or two, but it is far better than ChatGPT in terms of the accessibility of the buttons on its user interface, although it still has its own problems too. Gemini will also do this thing where it will tell me Gemini responded, right? Which is great. It's great that it actually does that. Because as I said, a lot of products actually don't let me know. So I just have to wait and hope that I guess correctly for when it responds. But the thing is, Gemini actually hasn't finished responding. It's still processing and typing out its response. So actually what will happen is by the time the response is fully generated, I would have already started reading the response, right? But then when it finishes, it like updates the window and for whatever reason moves me to just what's seemingly a random position on the page. So I actually then have to go and find the response again and then start reading all over again, which is a really big pain and honestly generally just a really big waste of time. The color contrast as well for people who are visually impaired, but not necessarily screen reader users. Generally, there's problems with the contrast in the default themes. or elements making it hard to read for users with low vision or color blindness, which is really important. Also, lack of customization. There's generally very limited options with these kind of AI tools, just because they're very new and they've been focusing on the functionality instead of the accessibility. They haven't actually added in basic things like changing the font sizes, the colors, or the display settings, which is obviously really important. The output readability is also quite poor. For example, AI-generated text can often be dense, verbose, or often lack clear paragraph breaks, which can be challenging for users with cognitive disabilities or users who just prefer a simpler language. The chat format can also be hard to for some people to process and retain information in long, complex conversations, which, yeah, I mean, especially given how many times you might have to reiterate something with AI, it can be kind of hard to know exactly what to want in the conversation sometimes and to actually find what you're looking for. Next up is the actual content that AI generates. So, for example, what I'm talking about here is the actual output that you will get from AI. So when you ask it to create something for you, whether it's a table, a document, or some code. So let's talk about text documents and web content. So for example, Word docs, blog posts, emails, etc. Headings are often just visual. So this means that the AI will actually visually style the text, will make it, you know, for example, bold and have larger font, but doesn't actually apply semantic heading tags. For example, H1, H2, H3 for proper Word document heading styles, which are really critical for proper screen reader navigation. So if you're not aware what this is, there are actually proper headings that you can add to Word documents and to web pages, etc. But what a lot of AI tools will do is they won't actually use those tags. They'll just make the text look like a heading. So this means then that I can't press H on my keyboard to go to the next heading, which is actually really useful as a screen reader user because it kind of lets you navigate around documents a lot faster. But if you're just making the text look like a heading, well, then my screen reader can't obviously tell that that is actually a heading and that it should actually be able to jump to that as the next heading on the page. So obviously, that's already a big problem. And this is exactly what I'm talking about, how AI can actually sometimes inhibit accessibility because to a sighted person, it might look like a heading and they might not realize that it isn't. But to me, it's obvious because obviously it just seems like regular text. The same things happened with lists. So for example, they might be visually formatted and they might actually have bullet point characters, but they'll actually lack proper UL, OL and LI tags, making them really difficult to navigate for screen reader users and essentially unreadable. Now, you can read the list, but for example, you can't jump to the next list item by pressing I or find the next list on the page by pressing U, which again are really important keyboard commands and again, it's kind of essential if you're using a screen reader. Tables are also a mess. So AI will often generate tables as plain text grids, so they just look like tables, or actual images without proper HTML tables with headers and proper table, row, and column relationships. So this means that, again, screen readers can't actually understand the data properly, and you can't navigate it properly either, because there's special keyboards command you can use again, so you can press Ctrl-Alt and then use the arrow keys to move around in the different cells and rows of the table. So let's say I'm looking at a table and it has name, age, and birthplace, right? So I go to the table and I'm now on the name column. If I press Ctrl-Alt down arrow, it will bring me down through that name column. And now if I press Ctrl-Alt right arrow, it will bring me over to the next column, which would be age. But if I'm not in a table and it's just a grid that looks like a table, I can't do that. So I'll just press down arrow and it would say, let's say, name, age, birthplace. So then it would go, you know, Paul, 25, Dublin. And then it would go, you know, name, age, birthplace for everybody. So I would only be able to read the table like that, which, especially if you have a table that has, you know, 14, 15 columns, a lot of time it can get very confusing. And because it doesn't have proper actual HTML attributes, it's not going to tell me what column I'm in. So if you just had a table that had, you know, six columns of numbers in a row, you know, if you don't know what row or column you're in, essentially the numbers are going to be useless. So again, really important there to actually have a proper table structure. Meaningless formatting is often also a problem. Overuse of bold, italics, or underlines with its semantic meaning can often be distracting as well. Now, here's a really big problem. Code generation, HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. So generally, AI will not add alt text to an image, and even if it does, it's very unhelpful and usually very generic. This is a fundamental accessibility requirement. So if your images don't have alt text, there's no way that I can tell what they are. For example, this isn't technically to do with AI, but I went to a website today and it had images on the homepage, and all the images said was test alt text, right? Which is obviously useless. So whatever system that person was using to make that website did have the functionality for them to add alt text, they just didn't. So what that meant is I couldn't tell what any of the images on the page were. So according to the WebAIM Million, over 96% of homepages still have detectable WCAG2 failures, and missing alt text is, as far as I'm aware, the most common of those failures, occurring on, I believe, over 70% of websites. Lack of ARIA attributes is also a really big issue. AI-generated interactive components, such as buttons, menus, often emit necessary ARIA roles, states, and properties for assistive technologies. So what this means, for example, is you might have a button, and you, let's say it's going to open a pop-up, right? So you would add ARIA-has-pop-up equals, and then it would be something like dialogue or menu or something like that to indicate that when you press it, it's going to open something. Also, if the button has an icon, you would need to add an ARIA label, because otherwise my screen reader is just going to say button. But the thing is, AI won't often add a lot of these attributes. Even if you're using something like GitHub Copilot, a lot of the time it won't add those in, even if you're just accepting the suggestions that it gives you while you code. Another thing is poor keyboard navigation and interaction. So the code probably won't contain robust keyboard navigations, focus management for interactive elements, which is really important. Also, semantic HTML neglect. It has a big tendency to use div and span excessively instead of semantic HTML5 elements, for example, nav, main, footer, header, etc., which are really important for screen reader navigation and for letting people know what kind of section of the page that they're actually in. The next thing here is visual content, such as images, videos, and presentations. So, image descriptions, AI-generated alt text often lacks nuanced context. For example, describing the purpose of an image and not just its literal content. And this is something that you'll see a lot. AI will be able to describe an image, but it can't describe it in the context that you need it to be described, or focus on the parts of the image that are relevant to the sort of context and application. Automatic captions and transcripts are often inaccurate, especially with complex vocabulary or accents, rarely include speaker identification or non-speech sounds as well. So, look, don't get me wrong. It is better to have something than nothing, and I'm forever saying that. But right now, AI is not very reliable for creating things like captions, subtitles, because often it will get things wrong, which I'm sure if you've watched a movie with subtitles, you have probably seen some of the subtitles be wrong. Which is obviously a really big issue, and especially if you're deaf, you want to be able to know what's going on. So if the captions are wrong, that's going to misrepresent what's going on in the show or movie that you're watching. Same thing with audio descriptions. It currently struggles to generate meaningful audio descriptions for visual content in videos, essential for blind users. Again, really important here. For example, if the AI generates an audio description that is wrong, because maybe the AI is having a hallucination or something, which is still super common with AI, obviously that's going to misrepresent what's going on in shows. And I've seen this all the time. Even with human-written ones, sometimes they'll get the names of characters wrong, but especially in AI-generated ones, it will constantly name characters the wrong thing, or it'll focus on the wrong details, or, you know, whatever. It will completely miss out on something that it needed to tell me about. So again, really, really, really important. The next thing here is also bias in training data, which can be a big problem as to why it can produce the wrong sort of outputs. AI models learn from vast data sets, and if that data is biased or lacks representation of disabled individuals, outputs can potentially perpetuate stereotypes of disabled people. So, for example, in a 2021 study for the National Bureau of Economic Research, they found that algorithms trained on biased datasets can perpetuate and even amplify existing societal biases against marginalized groups, including those with disabilities. So obviously, that's really important. And that goes to show that obviously, if we aren't using the correct training data for our AI models, then it's not going to produce the correct output either. So the next thing we really need to understand here is why and how to move forward. So why is this happening? What are the root causes for this problem? So lack of accessibility in training data. As I mentioned, AI models learn from existing web content, much of which is already inaccessible, which leads them to learning bad habits. So this is exactly what I was talking about a few minutes ago. 96% of the top 1 million websites have accessibility problems on their home pages. So that means that when AI looks at the top 1 million websites, it's going to see, okay, well, 96% of these don't have alt text for images. Therefore, I don't need to worry about alt text for images. Only 4% of people care about that. But the thing is, number one, that's just not true. It is far more than 4%. And that's going to then obviously lead the AI to generating bad outputs, which will then also just make the state of the internet even worse. And actually sort of inhibit the progress of accessibility. So prioritization of average user experience. Developers often prioritize features for the perceived average user, overlooking diverse needs for users with disabilities. Which, look, I get it, it makes sense. Obviously you want to focus on, you know, the average person who will be using your tool, but that doesn't mean that you have to leave out everybody else. You know, that's obviously ridiculous and not what people should do. You should be essentially making sure that the experience for somebody who is using your application is just as good as anybody else who could be using it. And look, as I keep telling you, this doesn't take much extra effort. I'm not saying that developers need to spend months and months and months extra making things. It's really not that hard. It's just adding one or two extra lines of code for whatever you're doing, and generally that will make it accessible. So focus on functionality over inclusivity. And this is kind of what I talked about near the start of the episode. The rush to release new AI capabilities often means accessibility is an afterthought. So yeah, like this is very true, you know, and I've experienced this even with Babbel recently, actually. So I reached out to them to tell them about some accessibility problems, and they replied to me and said, sorry, actually, we're focusing on Babbel AI right now, so we're not going to deal with your accessibility issues. Which, number one, is ridiculous. That's not how that should work. If I report a bug, it should be fixed. You know, it shouldn't be like, oh, well, sorry, we're too busy to fix bugs right now. We're working on AI stuff. But sadly, that's how a lot of stuff works. It's like, okay, we're working on the new cool thing. So actually, we don't care about fixing bugs or anything else right now because we're busy. And obviously, that's ridiculous. And this is definitely happening with OpenAI and Google as well at the minute. Limited understanding of nuance is also really important. Current AI lacks a true understanding of context, intent, and experience, the lived experience of disabilities, obviously, which, I mean, makes total sense, and this will definitely get better over time. Obviously, there's no built-in accessibility guardrails. AI tools don't inherently validate for accessibility standards, like WCAG, unless explicitly asked to do so, which obviously should be the case. So, for example, if you're asking it to generate HTML code, it should know, okay, well, the WCAG guidelines are something that I should be sort of incorporating into this. And when it generates you code, it should take those into account, and the code that it gives you back should inherently follow those guidelines. So how can we actually make accessibility a priority to AI and help make AI more so of an ally to accessibility. Obviously, educating developers. Emphasize training AI developers in accessibility best practices from the start. Obviously, accessible by design AI tools. Building AI interfaces that are inherently accessible, for example, keyboard friendly, screen reader compatible, and also customizable. So, currently, accessibility is sort of needed to be prompted for. So you'll need to tell Google Gemini, for example, hey, you know, make sure that you include all the proper ARIA attributes for this button. But that obviously should not be the case, and that is kind of the current workaround, but it should actually be part of the core functionality. When I tell it, hey, generate me a Word document, or hey, modify my Word document, you know, review my Word document, it should just automatically know, okay, these should be headings. You know, these should be links. These should be actual proper tables, etc., etc., etc. So again, really important to kind of build this functionality in from the start, and this will just make things better for everybody, and it will help make proper like Word documents and websites just better. So for example, instead of saying generate a Word document with proper semantic headings, H1, H2, H3, bulleted lists, and proper alt text for all images. That's what you'd currently have to do. But in reality, all you should have to say is generate a Word document on whatever, and it should just do that automatically. So for example, for code, you would currently have to say something like, write this HTML code, ensuring all images have descriptive alt text and interactive elements include appropriate ARIA attributes for screen readers. Make sure it's also keyboard navigable. So all you should really have to say is write this HTML code for whatever it is, instead of having to add in all that extra stuff in order to make sure that it's actually accessible. So obviously remembering also about human oversight and expertise, AI is a tool, not a replacement for human accessibility expertise. AI generated content must be reviewed and audited by individuals with accessibility knowledge. I mean, it's the same thing as with any AI content. If you generate a document, you should probably read it before you send it out, you know? And it's kind of the same thing when it comes to accessibility, is if you're going to use AI to help with accessibility, you should probably still check that it's actually accessible and not just trust AI, because not that AI can't ever be trusted, but a lot of the time it will make little mistakes just like people do. And even myself, like when I'm coding, sometimes it will suggest something to me and I'm like, no, that wouldn't actually be accessible. So yeah, really important to still actually test your stuff properly. So there is also specialist AI for accessibility. So for example, right, there's an AI from Be My Eyes. It's called Be My AI. It's part of the Be My Eyes app, which will actually describe things like images to you, which is actually really useful. The output you get from it is actually very verbose and generally very helpful. So tools like that are really great. I'm not sure whether they will be the future of AI, to be honest. I feel like that functionality will probably just become more sort of built into things like ChatGPT and Gemini. But for right now, having specialized tools like that is very useful and is actually personally very helpful for me anyway. So obviously advocacy and regulation is also really important. For example, the European Accessibility Act, pushing for more AI, accessible AI development. So for example, the European Accessibility Act 2025, the deadline for compliance will mean that certain products and services, potentially including AI systems, will have to be accessible. So this provides a sort of legal push, which is really great, and generally, sadly anyway, how you have to do things in order to get a lot of these companies to actually care. So the fact that regulations like this are sort of coming into effect are really great and mean that AI will probably become more accessible, and the output from AI will also have to become more accessible, because business customers aren't going to want to use AI if it's going to get them in trouble with the EU, obviously. So again, really important to kind of advocate for things like this and to support things like this, especially when they are actually very, very helpful. as I mentioned earlier in the episode, I do think that AI definitely has some long-term potential for improving accessibility and for helping people learn and understand accessibility. The current situation, however, is pretty nuanced and does require intentional design and also continuous effort. So, okay. For example, if you're a user of AI here, what you can do is be mindful, prompt for accessibility, and always review the outputs. For developers and designers, prioritizing accessibility from the outset. For advocates, I mean, obviously demanding accessible AI. And if, you know, everybody can kind of come together and make sure that we are sort of doing these three pretty simple things, then it could definitely make a huge difference and would definitely help to improve AI in its current state and also in the future. The future of AI and accessibility depends on intentional design and continuous human effort. And that's what's really important to remember here. Although we're building AI tools, it's still humans building those AI tools. So generally, how good they are in terms of accessibility will still be dictated by us. And that's, you know, definitely for the foreseeable future anyway. That's going to be it for this episode of the Envision Tech Podcast. As always, I've been your host, Paul Gagan. Feel free to let us know if you have any questions or comments, and I will see you all next week.